What would you do if you were Ronald Page? The bank where you have your savings account has just been bought out by Bank of America. So you walk up to the ATM machine to withdraw some money out. You think that you have about $300 in your checking account. You put in your card, you punch in the PIN, and you find out that through an error of the bank, you can withdraw an unlimited amount of money. $50,000, $100,000, $500,000, you can withdraw it. What would you do? Would you try to rationalize? Well, after all, it is the bank's fault. And I just have to be an innocent bystander here, and so I'm the beneficiary of good fortune. Besides, I've got a lot of needs that I could use that money for. Would you try to spiritualize it? Look what God has brought to me today. He has blessed me. Or would you call the bank and let them know what's happened? It's a tough question. And I think the answer to that question is found in this eighth command that God gives his people from Mount Sinai when he tells them, do not steal. The word steal basically means to take something that is not yours and to do it in a secretive manner or in a stealth manner or in an under the cover sort of way. When Lindsay and I used to live in Memphis, there was one evening where we went out to exercise at a nearby park. And we got out of our car and we forgot that Lindsay's purse was in the back seat and it was on display for people to see. And so when we came back from exercise, someone had broken the window and stolen the purse. It wasn't a huge deal. There was a little bit of cash in the purse, a few personal items, a few other things, but we weren't that concerned about it. But there was our checkbook, and it just had a couple of checks left in it. And the next morning, when I go to pull up our bank account, I find out that our bank account has been drained. That apparently the person took that checkbook, went to Tunica, which Tunica was a town just south of Memphis known for gambling, and had taken those last few checks, written them, and withdrawn money out of our bank account, I assume, to gamble. Now, everything was restored. The bank replaced the money. We were able to replace all the items that we lost. Everything was fine. But there was a feeling in my heart, a feeling that I had been victimized, a feeling that someone had taken something that was mine and taken it to gamble. I mean, if they had taken money to provide food or clothing, you know, I think I would have understood. But to gamble? That bothered me. I felt like someone had taken advantage of me, like someone had disrespected me. And I'm sure there are many of us here who have similar stories of theft where someone has taken something that is yours and you feel that same victimized feeling. And so it makes sense why God would say, do not steal. But is there more to this command than just theft? Is there something underneath the surface that God is trying to teach us and tell us as his people? I think there is. In the Old Testament, there was a strong connection between stealing and economics. That if you stole an ox or a donkey or some tool from some other person, it really hurt that person because it was going to hurt their financial livelihood. They needed that ox, they needed that donkey, they needed that tool or whatever it was because that helped provide for themselves and their family. If they didn't have it, then it was going to seriously hurt their chances to provide economically for their family, for their clan. And on the flip side, if someone takes an ox or takes a donkey, it was going to seriously help them financially. Now they had an extra animal, extra tool to be able to provide for themselves. They're going to earn more money. And typically, that's the way it is today. When someone steals, often they do it for some kind of financial benefit. There are occasions where people steal kind of for the high or for the rush of stealing, or maybe because it's some kind of habit. We call those people kleptomaniacs. By the way, have you heard the story about the kleptomaniac who went to the doctor? And he said, "Doctor, I think I'm a kleptomaniac. Is there anything I can take?" Some of y'all got that? If you didn't, come see me afterwards. There are some people like that, but most of the time people steal for financial reasons. They were trying to get money. They're trying to get an item so that they can sell it, so they can have money for some purpose. And then on the flip side, when something is stolen from us, where we feel the pinch is typically in our finances. Now, occasionally there are things stolen from us that have sentimental value, like a camera or like a piece of jewelry or like something else that we own that means a lot to us. But most of the time, where we feel the pinch is financially. We've got to pay the money to get the window fixed. We got to pay money to replace all the items that were stolen. We got to pay money to the insurance company to protect all the items that we own. That's where we feel it. And so oftentimes in the Old Testament and today, stealing is connected to economics. And there are three texts in the Old Testament that I think speak to this connection and help us understand the theological grounding of the eighth command. Those three texts are Exodus 22, Deuteronomy 22, and Exodus 23. And I'm just going to run through these three texts real quickly with you. So if you can hold on with me, I'm going to help you understand this. The first text is Exodus 22, verses 1 through 11. And in this text, we have this idea of restitution that God talks about. He says, if you steal an ox or a donkey or a tool or some kind of garment, you've got to pay that back. You've got to pay that back four or five times over. And the reason why you have to pay that back is because when you took that ox, it hurt that family financially. It hurt their economic situation, and you've got to care about that. And so you've got to restore them financially. Also, it mentions that if you borrow something, if you borrow an ox, or if you borrow a donkey, or you borrow a tool, and while you have it, something happens to it, and it's stolen from you, then you need to pay that back to the person you borrowed the ox from. Why? Because that ox represented the financial livelihood of the person you borrowed it from, and because they don't have it anymore, it's going to hurt them economically, and so you got to pay that back. You've got to pay restitution. And there's this phrase used in verse 10, breach of trust. That whenever someone steals something, what happens is there is a brokenness of trust. And within a community, there's supposed to be trust. You're supposed to trust one another. You're supposed to trust that your person down the street cares about you and cares about your economic livelihood. And so if you borrow something, you expect that person expects you to take care of it and to give it back to them. You expect your neighbor to watch after your things. There should be this trust developing within the community. And when things are stolen, when things are borrowed and not brought back, then it breaks that trust. And that's not what God wants his people to have, to do. The second passage is in Deuteronomy 22, which William read to us, verses 1 through 4. This passage doesn't talk about stealing per se, but it talks about ignoring. Maybe you noticed that as he read the text, how many times the word ignore is used. It says, if you see your countryman's ox or your neighbor's ox wandering down the street, you're not to ignore that. Literally, you're not to cause yourself to hide from it. Instead, you are to take that ox and you're to take it back to your neighbor. If you don't know who your neighbor is, you're to take care of it until your neighbor comes looking for it, and then you are to return it. There's no such thing as finders, keepers, losers, weepers. Did y'all ever do that when you were a kid? I found it, so it's mine. Sorry. No, that doesn't work in the Old Testament. It doesn't work for the people of Israel. If you find something, you take it back. Now, why? Because that ox represents the financial livelihood of your neighbor. They need that ox. It provides for their family. And so if they've lost it and they can't find it, it's going to seriously hurt them. So you need to take it back. You need to care about your neighbor. Care about their financial livelihood so much so that if you see some item of theirs that they need, that you will make sure that it gets returned to them. Now the third text, Exodus 23. This passage takes Deuteronomy 22 just one step further. It says, not only are you supposed to care and be concerned about your neighbor, you're to be concerned about your enemy. He says, if you see your enemy's ox wandering down the street, or your enemy's ox in distress, you are to take it back to your enemy. You're to be concerned not only for the guy down the street that you like, you're to be concerned for the guy down the street that you don't like. Why? Because that ox represents the financial livelihood of your enemy, and you're to be concerned about that. Now, notice these three texts here in the Old Testament. What they're trying to tell us is this: that being a part of God's people means that we are to be concerned about our neighbor. We're to be concerned about their financial livelihood. So if we take something, we need to pay restitution. If we see something of theirs that they need, we need to bring it back to them. Even if they're our enemy, we bring it back to them because we are concerned about our neighbor's financial livelihood. Now, in these texts, it mentions two ways in which we cannot care about our neighbor and their financial livelihood. The first way is through what I call active stealing. This is what we typically think of when we think of stealing: taking something, actively taking something that is not ours. Theft, burglary, breaking into someone's house, taking items that are not theirs to have. But it happens in other ways too. Tax evasion, stealing from the government. Shoplifting, taking a piece of merchandise that belongs to a store. Online piracy, downloading movies, music that is not ours, belongs to someone else, doing it for free. Plagiarism, stealing a piece of homework, stealing research paper that is not ours, but we're taking it for ourselves. There are even some preachers out there who steal sermons. I don't do that. But there are some preachers out there that do. And in all of these situations, the person is stealing something for some kind of financial benefit. So they can either have money, or they can have some item that they don't have to put the time and the money in to get it. And the person who's hurt when something like that is stolen, they're hurt financially. The company is hurt. The store is hurt because they lose a piece of merchandise. The writer who wrote that song is hurt because they're not being compensated for what they've done. The preacher who wrote the sermon is hurt. He's not getting compensated for what he's done. And typically when these things happen, they happen for maybe three reasons. Addiction. Someone's involved in addiction, they've got to feed that addiction, so they do whatever necessary to get money to feed that addiction, even breaking into someone's house or car or whatever. Vindictiveness. When I've talked to people who have stolen things, often I hear that. Well, the company had gotten me so many times, I had to get the company. They had cheated me so many times out of my pay, I had to get them back. Vindictiveness. But ultimately, I think it all boils down to selfishness. Just caring about myself and what I want and what I desire to the point where I don't care who it hurts, who it affects, or how it changes someone's financial livelihood. But there's another way that these three texts talk about us not caring about our neighbor, and that's what I call passive stealing. Passive stealing. This is where in Deuteronomy 22, you see the ox coming down the street and you turn a blind eye to it. And you say, you know what, it's probably none of my business. I don't need to meddle in what my neighbor is doing. I don't need to be concerned about that. And so we look away as our neighbors are struggling and suffering financially. Now there's a couple reasons I think we do this sometimes. Sometimes just because of indifference. Just don't care. Just don't care about the neighbors around us. Don't care about the people living in our city. Don't care about the people around the world who might be suffering. We just turn a blind eye to it all. Sometimes it's because we're seeking personal gain at others' expense. Sometimes we become wealthy because certain people are becoming poor. I think often that happens. We live in plenty because others are suffering as a result of it. And we just don't really care. And ultimately, again, I think it boils down to selfishness, being so self-absorbed that all we care is about ourselves and what we receive and what we have and whether we're comfortable or not. And we don't care on how that affects the people around us. And I think the message of the eighth commandment is this, that as a part of God's people, we're to care. We're to care about our neighbor down the street. We're to care about their financial livelihood and whether they're going to make it. In fact, we're to care so much that if we have the opportunity to withdraw an unlimited amount of money at an ATM, we're not going to do it because we know that money belongs to my neighbor. If we have the opportunity to take something that is not ours, we're not going to do it because we know somewhere down the line that belongs to a neighbor and I'm to care about them and be concerned about them. And if I see my neighbor struggling financially, suffering, whether it's my neighbor in this neighborhood, neighbor in this city, or neighbor in the world, I'm going to care about them because I'm to be concerned for my neighbor. There is more to life than just your family making it financially. Did you know that? There's more to life than your measly bank account. There's more to life than you just having the money that you want to be comfortable. And that is that we as God's people are called to care about those that are around us. Care so much that we're not going to actively steal from them and we're not going to passively steal either. And isn't that the essence of the gospel? The message of the gospel is that we are called to take self off the throne of our hearts and put Christ on the throne of our hearts. That it's not going to be about self-will, self-desires, and self-interest. Instead, we're going to deny self. We're going to offer our bodies as living sacrifices to God. And we're going to let Christ be the ruler of our lives. And Christ says, if you're going to follow me, then you need to, first of all, love God with all of your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And secondly, you're to love your neighbor as yourself. You're to give up. Give up of yourself and of what you want and care about those that are around you. And to realize there's more to life than just what you want, what we want. We need to care about others. And in order for that to happen, in order for us to remove self and put Christ on the throne of our heart, I think it takes a radical transformation. And this past week, Dan reminded me of a great story in the New Testament that illustrates this. It's the story of Zacchaeus in Luke 19. If you remember that story, Zacchaeus was a wee little man, which means he was short. Don't remember that song. But while he was short in stature, he was fat in wealth. He was a tax collector, which probably meant that he did some active stealing. He took more money than he was supposed to because he had the power to do so. It also probably meant that he did some passive stealing, that he had become wealthy while others around him became poor. And probably the reason why they became poor is because he had become wealthy. And everyone thought he was a sellout. He was working for the enemy. He was working for the Romans, and people didn't like that. So people didn't like tax collectors. But all of a sudden, Jesus comes to his town. And for some reason, Zacchaeus wants to see Jesus. Maybe he had heard that Jesus was favorable to tax collectors. Maybe he had even heard that one of his apostles was Matthew, a former tax collector. Whatever the reason is, Zacchaeus wants to see Jesus. But he's too short. He can't get up high enough to see Jesus. So he climbs up in a sycamore tree. I don't know if we have a sycamore tree in our community garden, but we need one. I don't know if they grow in this climate. What a great honor to be the tree that would allow Zacchaeus to see Jesus. He climbs up on the tree, and he sees Jesus for the first time, and Jesus comes to the tree, and he stops, and he says, Zacchaeus, calls him by name. Never met him before, but still calls him by name. He says, Zacchaeus, what are you doing up in the tree? Come down, because I'm going to go to your house today. And to the surprise of everyone around Jesus, he shares a meal at the house of a tax collector. And in the middle of that meal, Zacchaeus, maybe in awe of the love that Jesus had shown him, maybe in awe of the grace that Jesus had bestowed upon him. Maybe because he had been listening to Jesus' teachings, he stands up and he says, I'm going to be different. And anybody that I've wronged, I'm going to pay them back four times over. I'm going to provide restitution for the act of stealing that I've done. And then secondly, he says, I'm going to devote half my possessions to the poor. I'm going to care about my neighbor in light of all the passive stealing that I've done. I'm going to be different. And when Jesus sees that radical transformation that's happened in Zacchaeus' heart, he says this statement. He says, today, salvation has come to this house. Zacchaeus has removed self from the throne of his heart and has put Christ. And you can see it because now he is concerned about his neighbor and he's living out the eighth command. So what did Ronald Page do? The 55-year-old Detroit man who steps up to a Bank of America ATM machine and realizes that he can withdraw an unlimited amount of money. Over the span of 2 weeks, he withdrew $1.5 million. And he burned through that money just as fast as he got it, gambling. He was in the midst of an addiction. An open ATM was like handing cocaine to a crack addict. He took that money and went through it. Gambled for some stretches like 24 hours to 36 hours without sleeping. But finally he was caught. They arrested him, convicted him of what he had done, gave him 15 months in prison, because after all, it was the bank's fault. They didn't penalize him too much. But they said, you do have to pay back the money, which will take him the rest of his life if he ever gets close. And someone asked Ronald Page, why'd you do it? Why'd you withdraw the money, spend it all on gambling? This is what he said. He said, I was sick, but I'm going to get well. And I think in a sense he was right. He was sick. Because whenever you're so self-centered that all you care about is getting money and things for yourself, and you're unconcerned about how it affects the people around you, you are sick. You're not living out the intention that God has designed for you. You're not living up to the standard that God has called you to. So we must repent. And I know there are some of us that we have lived selfishly in various ways, and it's manifested itself maybe in active stealing from time to time, maybe in passive stealing. But we need that radical transformation in our heart, just like it came to Zacchaeus. And that's what's so wonderful about baptism. That we go into the waters of baptism, and we go as a person living for ourselves, and then we die to ourselves in baptism. And we come up, and we're a new person, and we're living for Jesus now. We're walking in a new life, in a new way. And we're about loving God, and we're about loving our neighbor. That's what we're going to be about. And if you're ready to give up self-will and start living for God's will, ready to be baptized into Christ, when we sing our song in just a second, just come on down to the front. But maybe you need to repent of just that selfishness that I've been talking about, just consumed with yourself. We're going to have elders surround this building, and I encourage you to walk to them and just say, pray for me that I can care about my neighbor, be concerned about my neighbor, and live for Jesus and not for self. If there's any way that we can help you this morning, please come as together we stand and sing.